This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Tehran warns that holding a special session of the UN Human Rights Council on Iran will negatively affect the country's cooperation with the West. The family of a Palestinian journalist killed by Israeli forces says her deliberate killing was part of Israel's wide-scale war on Palestinian media workers. Also, the U.S. announces a new $400 million military aid package for Ukraine, including air defense systems and surface-to-air missiles. Hello and welcome. Your world news come to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. It's good to have you with us. Iran's foreign minister has slammed double standards of some Western governments rejecting their attempt to organize a special session of the UN Human Rights Council on Iran. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the comment in a phone call with UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. He said that the Geneva-based council session must be held on the governments promoting violence and terror and not on Iran, that is a true defender of human rights. The top diplomat also warned about negative effects of a political move by the UN rights body on Iran's relations with the West. Guterres, for his part, rejected the council's meddling in internal affairs of other countries. The Iranian foreign ministry summons the ambassador of the Azerbaijan Republic to Tehran over, quote, anti-Iran propaganda by Azeri officials and media. The ministry conveyed its strong protest against unfriendly remarks by officials in Baku, urging an immediate end to such actions. It also called on Baku to take appropriate measures to avoid their repetition. That follows the remarks by Azeri President Ilham Aliyev regarding Iran's recent maneuvers in the country's northeast, or I should say northwest. Earlier, Iran's foreign minister or foreign ministry spokesman also reacted to comments by reiterating Tehran's support for the territorial integrity of all its neighbors. Nasser Kanani added that Iran supports peaceful settlement of differences between Baku and Yerevan. He said a recent military exercise by Iranian armed forces was a regular move and Iran's neighbors had been informed in advance. The family and colleagues of slain Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akleh say she was deliberately targeted as part of Israel's, quote, wide-scale war on Palestinian media workers. They made the comment during a public hearing by a team of the UN Human Rights Council probing the roots of the conflict in Palestine. They emphasized that the Israeli killing of Abu Akleh was part of a systematic policy to perpetuate violence against Palestinian journalists. Her family also urged concrete accountability and justice. Earlier, the president of the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate accused the Israeli regime of waging a war on the media. Nasser Abu Bakr said the regime's murder of Abu Akleh in May was, quote, extrajudicial and a war crime. Abu Akleh was fatally shot while covering an Israeli raid in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. The U.S. has announced more military aid worth $400 million for Ukraine, despite warnings from Russia.
This authorization is the Biden administration's 25th drawdown of equipment from DoD inventories for Ukraine since August 2021. Capabilities in this package include missiles for Hawk air defense systems, 4 Avenger air defense systems and Stinger missiles, additional ammunition for the HIMARS, which are the high mobility artillery rocket systems.
The Pentagon official said the new military package includes short-range air defense systems and missiles. She said Spain has also made a commitment to provide U.S.-made Hawk air defense systems to Ukraine. Spain's defense ministry says the decision to send 2 more launchers as well as artillery and mortar rounds was in response to a request by NATO and Ukraine. The U.S. has been the biggest sponsor of the Ukrainian military since the beginning of its war with Russia in February. The value of the U.S. military aid now stands at over $18.6 billion. Moscow has repeatedly warned against the delivery of foreign arms to Ukraine, saying it only prolongs the conflict. The Russian army says it has begun pulling its forces back from Ukraine's southern city of Kherson, which Moscow has had under control since the early days of the war.
The units of the Russian troops are maneuvering to prepared positions on the left bank of the Dnipro River in strict accordance with the approved plan.
Russia announced its decision to withdraw its forces from the west bank of the Dnipro River on Wednesday. Moscow says the move is aimed at saving the lives of Russian soldiers and their fighting capacity. Ukraine claims its forces have recaptured 12 towns and villages in the strategic region of Kherson since Wednesday. Kiev also says it has reclaimed the southern town of Snihirivka, the last remaining Russian-held town in the Mykolaiv region. Meanwhile, the NATO chief says the Western military alliance will support Ukraine for as long as it takes. Stoltenberg says the, quote, unprecedented support is vital for the Ukrainian progress on the battleground. The UK's cost of living crisis, due in large part by energy price hikes, is pushing more and more people to poverty. Said Puruza travels to a deprived area in East London to find out how soaring prices are impacting vulnerable people and businesses. Have a look.
Walthamstow, a town in East London, home to more than 150,000 people and the longest outdoor market in Europe.
It also happens to be one of the poorest areas, where a national cost of living crisis is pushing more and more people to the brink. And less money in people's pockets has meant less business for the shops and stalls here.
Couple that with soaring utility bills and increased prices that make running a successful business a real challenge.
My weekly sale is like half and half now, this time especially. For example, is I'm earning about a weekly 1,000. For example, it's go 5. It's half and half now. And the people are scary. They don't spend much. They are very choosy now.
Quiet, very quiet. We see the market empty. Because we have people, but like pass, just on the pass. Nobody do shop because they don't have money. But rent now high. But energy right now very, very high, gas high, and because that expensive right now.
The cost of living crisis has fed into the housing market as well, forcing Anne, who works in a coffee shop, to move house.
A couple months ago, I was living in a house share, but the landlord got really, like, worried about the cost of living, and he, like, tried so hard to, like, increase the prices little by little, and we ended up, like, having an argument about it. And he ended up, like, evicting me because, like, I didn't think it was fair, but he was forcing us to do stuff. So now, like, I'm paying, like, a really high price for, like, such a small room, no, like, living room or anything.
More than 6,000 people in this area claim universal credit. Recent surveys have found that nearly half of the children here live in poverty. Desperate parents and households are having to rely on charities such as this one to get by. We were told the Roxana Khan Foundation Food Bank gives donations to an increasing 300 households every week. Inflation remains stubbornly in the double digits, and the government has hinted at increased taxes and cuts to public spending. Many here and across the UK will find it even more difficult to make ends meet. Saeed Puriza, Walthamstow, East London.
France says it will allow a rescue ship transporting over 200 migrants to dock at its southern coast. The French government has lashed out at Italy for failing to take in the migrants.
The new Italian authorities have made the incomprehensible choice to not respond to multiple calls for assistance addressed by the ship over the past days, even if it was uncontestably in Italy's search and rescue zone. In this context, France has decided on an exceptional basis to make up for the Italian government's unacceptable behavior and to invite the ship to come to the military port of Toulon.
Darmanin said Italy's approach will lead to extremely strong consequences on bilateral relations. He said France has suspended a plan to relocate 3,500 migrants currently in Italy in protest against Rome's refusal to take in the ship. The minister said France will also reinforce controls at its borders with Italy. This is the latest European standoff over where to disembark migrants picked up after trying to reach Europe from North Africa. Italy has been increasingly frustrated with taking in the bulk of those rescued. Rome says other states, including France, must do more. The non-stop years-long use of pellet weapons to quell anti-India protests in India-administered Kashmir is taking its toll on the victims, especially those who were hit in the eyes. Our correspondent Shahana Butt reports.
A recent study published in the Indian Journal of Ophthalmology reveals that a large number of those who sustained eye injuries due to the use of pellet guns in the mainstay of Srinagar between July and November 2016 have suffered some degree of vision loss. The survey conducted on 777 eye operations during the period reveals 80% of the victims have vision limited to counting fingers. 35-year-old Arshid Ahmed, a student of arts, was hit by pellets in both eyes in October 2016. 6 years on, Arshid says his vision of higher studies diminished just like his eyesight.
Initially, I thought things might get better after the operation, but as time passed, it started to get worse. The most hurtful thing for me is that I am dependent. I feel I'm a burden. How long will my family be able to support me?
Arshid's family was more fearful than hesitant to talk, and convincing Arshid to speak to Press TV about his condition was no less than a Herculean task.
I'm often confined to my room. Darkness is my future, although the government has bragged about rehabilitation and support for pellet victims. We're left to helplessness and nothing else, and speaking about my helplessness has now become a crime.
Before the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in 2019, New Delhi used shotguns for almost a decade to quell anti-India demonstrations in Indian-administered Kashmir, resulting in thousands of pellet injuries and the epidemic of vision loss in the region. Following the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in August 2019, people here might be upset about many things changing in the region. However, a remarkable achievement for government forces is that not even a single pellet gun has been used in the region following a tough crackdown on protesters. Kashmir has been a bone of contention between India and Pakistan for decades. Both lay claims to the region but rule it in parts. India regards Kashmir as an integral part of its territory. Meanwhile, analysts say since the abrogation of Kashmir's special status, New Delhi seems to own everything in Kashmir except the problems of its people. Shahana Butt, Indian-administered Kashmir.
The U.S. continues with large-scale military exercises involving South Korea and Japan as North Korea launches missiles amid reports Pyongyang is ready for a seventh nuclear test. Meanwhile, in South Korea, peace activists have held a vigil outside the U.S. embassy to call for the resignation of the country's president and an end to the trilateral alliance. Frank Smith reports from Seoul.
It's extended into last weekend as North Korea launched more missiles. Pyongyang argues U.S.-led military exercises revived this year are a rehearsal for invasion. Amid reports North Korea may conduct a seventh nuclear test, U.S. officials warned Pyongyang the use of nuclear weapons would end its regime. In South Korea Thursday night, university peace activists gathered for a vigil outside the U.S. embassy, calling for an end to the U.S.-South Korea-Japan alliance and removal of President Yoon. The U.S. has also conducted renewed joint drills with Japan, including a naval fleet review as Tokyo seeks to normalize its military activities.
North Korea faces much stronger conventional forces in the U.S.-South Korea alliance, which is at least partly why it showcases its missile and nuclear deterrence. With the U.S., South Korea, and Japan all bolstering their weapons and military drills, the questions are if and when North Korea will conduct a seventh nuclear test. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Control of the United States Congress still hangs in the balance after Americans casted their ballots in Tuesday midterm elections. The final results will not be out until after December 6th. With that, many fear the U.S. might be facing potentially dangerous unrest, similar to what followed the 2020 general vote. We have a report on that.
Another nationwide election in the United States, and it will be another drawn-out, bitterly fought, and highly divisive process to determine the final outcome for Congress. Starting with the certainties, the last-minute predictions of a Republican red wave did not materialize. They did, however, take control of at least the House of Representatives, but likely with a much smaller majority than many expected. That means America will have a divided federal government, that President Joe Biden's policymaking will be hobbled for his final 2 years, and that the Democratic Party did suffer a significant national-level defeat.
Hasn't anyone had an education? I'm appalled. We had to take the constitutional test. It is so mean-spirited. Our kids are suffering. I have a 24-year-old. They do not like this country. They do not like what's going on, and their lives are hard. This is the American dream. Now they want to take away Medicare.
In a repeat of 2020, the Senate will likely come down to a runoff vote in the state of Georgia to be held on December 6th. That means Americans will have to endure nearly a month of uncertainty.
It's stupid that we would have that, need to take that much time, but part of it's because of a structure of how our, you know, we used to have this done really, you know, just 10 years ago, 15 years ago. We had it done in 2 days, at worst case scenario, you know. But in the last three national elections, it's suddenly become an issue of, you know, we've got all this, you know, false voting, fake voting, blah, blah, blah.
Near universal worries about politically related violence didn't happen on election day, but it increasingly seems to be more accurate to call it election month. Adding to the growing tension is that controversial ex-president Donald Trump is expected to announce on November 15th that he's running for the presidency again. America may soon be arguing over the 2024 election before the 2022 election has been completely decided. To the chagrin of Democrats and many Republicans, at least 74% of over 250 Trump-backed candidates were victorious, and so-called 2020 election deniers won repeatedly at top state and federal levels. It appears that the factional split within the Republican Party is more cemented than ever, but the unexpected closeness of the congressional vote reveals that the overall split between America's left and right is more narrow, contested, and sharper than ever. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Analysis of recent events in Iran. In this program, we look at women's status within the Islamic Republic of Iran and emphasize the social life of women in the Islamic Republic. We also take a look at Islam's viewpoints about women. Please stay with us. Islam defends women's rights more than other religions. In fact, the prophets and messengers of God, peace be upon them, have always talked about life and freedom. Life and freedom can be thought of as their slogan. The Almighty says in Ayah 24 of Surah Anfal in the Holy Quran, O believers, respond to Allah and His Messenger when He calls you to that which gives you life. And know that Allah stands between a person and their heart, and that to Him you will all be gathered. The Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, used to live in a society which lacked any sort of humanitarian, ethical, and moral values. This is why pre-Islamic Arabs are referred to as Jahiliyyah Arabs. They did not value women, and they even denied women their right to life. In those days in Arabia, it was customary to bury alive newly born female infants. With the emergence of Islam, though, this custom was totally uprooted, and Islam fought this superstition and others like it in all of its manifestations. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was the most staunch supporter of women's rights, and Islam enshrined the most fundamental and the most important right of women, the right to live a full life. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, used to treat his daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, with such great respect and care that everybody was surprised and took note of this. He always used to kiss her hand, and when returning from a journey, the first person he went to see was Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her. Similarly, when Prophet Muhammad was about to embark on a journey, the last house he always visited to bid farewell was that of his daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her. There are many hadiths or narrations from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, in which the Holy Prophet calls upon everyone to treat women with respect, with dignity and decency. The Holy Prophet used to say, "The best men of my ummah are those who are most kind to their family members, and those who are not condescending or coarse and harsh towards their family." Other hadiths or narrations relating to Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, include the following. "The best of you is he who is best to his wife. Always act kindly towards women. Paradise lies under the feet of the mother." The Holy Prophet, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was asked once, "Whose right was the greatest on man?" The Holy Prophet replied, "His mother's." Modern Western civilization is based upon money and material gain. In Western society, money and wealth are everything. People are allowed to do whatever they like as long as they don't break the laws of the land. Immoral and unethical behavior is allowed so long as no laws are broken. This is a shame, of course, since Islam does not accept immoral and unethical behavior. In fact, Islamic teachings are based on monotheism, morality and ethics, and Islam sets out clear boundaries for freedom, emphasizing that freedom and responsibility go hand in hand. Islam, of course, always emphasizes the importance of human dignity and human honor. False Western slogans of supporting Iranian women's rights is really a pointer to the fact that Westerners are angry and frustrated with Iranian women, who have delivered a severe blow to Western civilization exposing the fact that Western women are exploited and abused in Western societies. Frustrated with the fact that they are unable to take on the Islamic Republic militarily, the terrorist United States and Israeli regimes have now resorted to a vicious media campaign against Iran, using the pretext of women's rights. No doubt the Iranian nation will emerge triumphant once more from this challenge, successfully overcoming and defeating the hybrid war which is now being waged by the West against Islamic Iran. The duplicitous and deceitful Westerners have falsely claimed that Islam denigrates women and does not value women. They claim that men and women are not equal within Islam. However, the Lord Most High says in Ayah 1 of Surah Nisa in the Holy Quran, O humanity, be mindful of your Lord, who created you from a single soul, and from it he created its mate. And through both he spread countless men and women. And be mindful of Allah, in whose name you appeal to one another, and honor family ties. Surely Allah is ever watchful over you. According to Islamic teachings, men and women have been created from a single soul. The duties and responsibilities that have been given to them are equal. For example, with regards to daily prayers, with regards to the Hajj pilgrimage, fasting during the holy month of Ramadan, and social responsibilities such as enjoining good and refraining from that which has been prohibited. Both men and women have equal duties and equal responsibilities. According to Islamic teachings, there is no difference between men and women, and both have been endowed with intelligence and human dignity. According to Islam, men and women complement one another and they complete each other. Both men and women can help each other grow and evolve. Both of them are central planks of society and central planks of the family. The Holy Quran teaches us that the value of each human being, both men and women, lies in their piety and abstinence from wrong and sinful behavior. According to the Holy Quran, men and women who are more pious are closer to God and more valued by God. Today, Iranian women are active in all fields of science, technology, economy, business and society, and have excelled in all of these fields.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear ladies. Welcome to another episode of Muslim Lady. In here, we're talking about the topics that are most interested to Muslim ladies. Well, I am Asma, your humble host, and here with me, I have Sister Zainab to help us with some information about the book that we recently have started to talk about. In this book, we are gathering some information about the personal and also social aspects of life of Sayyida Zahra, salamullah alayha. Since we, as Muslim, follow Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam because they are the practical example of the perfect Muslim, according to the Holy Book of Quran, So we go for Lady Fatima, salamullah alayha, in order to get more of how to be as a real Muslim lady.
Yeah.
So in today's episode, we're going to talk about some remaining points about beauty, and then we would go for the next topic of this book that we are talking.
And I would like to name that book
Yes, that would be very good.
That's Ethics and Lifestyle of Lady Zahra Sallallahu Alaiha, a book by Dr. Muhammad Reza Jabari.
And since the book does not have an English translation, I guess,
yes,
we are going to just give you the gist of this book through some sessions. And we've been doing that quite some sessions. It's been so long right now.
Yeah.
Being the daughter of the Prophet, of the last Prophet of Allah, she is being so modest. But right now, what we see in our society is that women, if they get, a husband who is so much affluent, or a father who is a tradesman or anything.
I just said if he's a business tycoon.
Yeah.
Then. Yeah.
Yeah. If they are like that, they would believe that they must be recognized by every single man and women outside. You know what I mean?
That's why
they do not love to stay modest.
When we talked about the clothing, we said avoid using clothes that make you center of attraction or pick you particularly out from a crowd. When we talked about beauty and personal care, we said to not wear perfumes or anything on your body that makes you again center of attraction.
Yeah, and we said that as women, naturally, we do have this interest, this urge to be noticeable by others. But that doesn't mean that every single man outside should know me.
What is Islam? What does the word Islam mean in itself? Submitting. Yeah. Submitting to Allah. Surrendering. It's basically to surrender. When you're surrendering, okay, I give
up. Exactly.
I give up. Islam knows.
I give everything in my life up for Allah.
Yes. When you know that I love this particular thing, but you give it up for the sake of Allah, that's like surrenderance. That's giving up in the way of Allah. And that's what the word Islam in itself means.
Exactly.
To surrender, to submit. In our previous episode, we ended with the fact that the very beautiful question that was asked in the mosque among the men, and the answer was given by Lady Zahra Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam indirectly, and when it reached to Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified family, he said that definitely Fatima is a part of me. And what the answer was, what was the question and what was the answer? The question was, what is the best thing for a female? The answer was, the best thing for a female is that she does not get looked by any non-mahram or no non-mahram. She also
does not
look at...
That means she keeps her dignity. All a woman has, all a lady owns, is her dignity, her character.
Exactly. Now today, you are out there in a society, mm-hmm. you have to work with men, and they are definitely non-mahram.
Too much of interactions
in your
between
workplace,
men and women.
In the metros, in the buses.
Yeah, in the buses.
In the streets.
Because women have brought into society, and they've been into public situations more and more.
You have to be in public sector out there. Now, does that mean that you don't have to look at a non-mahram, or non-mahram does not have to look at you? I'll explain that as my if you want to go for a short
inshallah.
Break.
Inshallah. Let's go for a short break, dear listeners, and we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back to your ladies. This is Muslim Lady in here with Sister Zainab. We are having some discussions about the book that we are covering, which has been quite actually a long time that we're doing it. We were talking about the beauty, and we reached the point that you actually recited a narrative, a story from Sayyida Zahra Salamullah Alayha. You said there was a question, and that was, what is the best thing for a woman? And she answered that the best thing for a woman is to keep herself away from the gist of it is like this, the talks of other men or women.
And she also herself does not talk about other non-mahrams.
Yeah, and to keep her dignity. What is so much beautiful about a woman is her dignity, and how that dignity is going to be achieved through being modest.
The best thing for a woman is that she does not look at any non-mahram, or no non-mahram looks at her. This is the answer she gives. This means, does that mean that you can't go out in the public sector and you can't work? No, it never means that.
Yeah, we were just talking about it.
I would emphasize on the point that you may have different interpretations. That's okay. It's my personal interpretation that we, as women, we are also working in a public sector. We go out in the streets.
Yeah, exactly.
We have conversations with the public.
Inevitably, you're going to meet too much of men.
You know, just to put it in simple words, Asma, it means that you do not act in a society in a way in front of a non-mahram. When she says do not look at non-mahram, it does not mean that while you're conversating, while you're in a meeting, just lower your gaze and all. Lower your gaze when you feel like the situations are going somewhere else.
You know what, sister? I usually, when I hear this sentence, I just take it like this way, that we shouldn't look at it as the literal way it has been said. I think it's mostly has a metaphorical connotation.
Exactly. When we have the same verse in Quran which says to men that lower your gaze, it does not mean that while you're walking on the street, non-mahram women are also coming out. It never means that. Close your eyes or completely put your head down so that you just strike with a towel to take care of your health,
exactly.
To take care of the surroundings. You have traffic signals, you have different things you have to look upon, you have to take care.
Yeah.
When you say that don't look at non-mahrams, is that try to keep your modesty. Try to keep your dignity.
And do not penetrate on the things
because
that you're looking.
Because there is so much, you know, a woman, there was a joke. There was a joke some time ago going on the social media. Some women were talking, they were saying like, when someone wants to propose a woman, woman knows before a man comes and proposes her.
Yeah.
She also knows who is the next person coming up.
Exactly, yeah.
Why I mentioned this joke here, which has a little link to this discussion of ours, is that yes, you as a woman have these intuitions. What kind, you get this sense that what other men is thinking about you, or what other men is, what you know, what kind of viewpoint or the image he has of yours.
You know, we have this feeling,
sense.
This sense.
Women have this very strong sense.
We as women,
when you have that sense, try to ignore, try to avoid, try to, if your covering or your appearance is in a way, that is not keeping, becoming a barrier in the modesty of your Muslim brother. Try to, compose yourself.
Exactly.
This means this. This does not mean that do not go out, do not work, which is a stereotype, actually.
Yeah.
Which is a kind of thought in the societies. That this is there, we got to treat this thing. We have to keep modesty. Help your Muslim brothers to keep modesty, whatever the way you can.
Yeah, that's very true. So, dear ladies, let's go for a short break, and then after that, we'll be back. Thank you for staying with us. Welcome back, Muslim ladies. Well, we were talking about how to keep it modest. And we actually mentioned this very fact that when we say that a woman should keep her dignity just in a way that she could not be distinguished in every single crowd she goes, we actually mentioned that. We do not mean that a woman must stay at home, or a Muslim woman is just restricted to stay at home to be kept away from social works. No. On the contrary, you can see many Muslim women who are doing wonders all around the world.
Yeah.
Yet they have their hijab, they have their covers.
When you're making yourself center of attraction through your clothing, through your perfumes, or through any other means,
yeah,
you're violating the human rights that exactly. are related to yourself.
This is very
because
true.
Because public, men, women out there who are respecting you, who are knowing you, they know you because of your dresses. Exactly. They know you because of your appearance. I'm trying to say, when you make yourself center of attraction, the men out there, the women out there, because sometimes women try to make themselves a center of attraction by just removing their hijab.
Appearance is the thing that represents you to other people.
No, it's actually when you remove your hijab and you made yourself center of attraction through your hair. Because when we said do not make yourself center of attraction, it does not limit to your clothes only.
Yeah.
It limits even to your, it goes back to you, mm-hmm. what kind of perfumes you use, and also your behavior. Because I have seen asthma people out there who actually use very modest clothes, very long clothes, very good appearance. But in their behavior and talks, they always try to be center of attraction.
Exactly.
This signals that they have some weaknesses in the families. They have some lack of love in the family. Mm-hmm. Go and treat yourself that way. Go and talk to your partners. Go and talk to your parents to give you more attention. Do not seek that attention in this society. That's really, really bad. You know, you as mothers give maximum attention to your daughters. Give maximum love to your daughters. You as mothers definitely love your daughters, but express that love. Because until and unless you're not expressing that love,
yeah,
what will happen is that you're creating troubles for yourself. Mm-hmm. You're going to seek that love outside one or the other way. Now we're talking about human rights violations. What I meant was that people out there, when you make yourself center of attraction, they know you by your hair. They know you by your, I don't know, makeup appearance, or they know you by your center of attraction dresses. And whenever you have to prove yourself out in the society, you always have to go and make those expenses to get the center of attraction dresses, to get the same perfumes, to get, I don't know, just in order to show yourself.
Yeah.
The inner you is getting suffocated.
Exactly.
The inner you is dying. Mm-hmm. And this is the biggest kind of human rights violation you can do to yourself.
Yeah.
So in order to make yourself known in the society, make yourself known to your friends, use intellect.
Exactly.
Let them know prove you through your intellect. Let them know you through your heart. Let them know you through your actions.
Yeah.
Not through your appearance. Not
exactly.
through your appearance. That's the biggest kind of violation you're doing to yourself. And the, unfortunately, those who raise the slogans of feminism and all, they're trying to cover this and make the story upside down.
They're deviating the true story. Well, yeah, that's very true. And just to mention another thing, well, actually, this is the gist of what we were talking about. We as human beings who live in the same society, in the same country, in the same city, whatever community we have just something that is called domino effect.
Yeah.
Whatever that I do is not going to just have an effect in my personal life. It's going to affect another person, another person, another person. So if the women themselves are trying to make the world go in a direction that the other citizens of this world, which mean the men, look only at their appearance.
It's not about my choice, my body.
Exactly.
It's about keeping modesty of your brothers.
So it's going to be the same thing as you just mentioned. So if these women are changing the situation, they are violating the rights of other women.
Exactly.
Which is so much wrong.
Yeah.
And I hope for an intellectual society in which all men and women know what they're doing, and for Muslim ladies to rock it on and more and more. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us. I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting for something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The idea that the U.S. democracy is increasingly broken was evidently seen in midterms. Based on an analysis of Federal Election Commission, 465 American billionaires have pumped over $881 million into federal midterm races, with the top 20 donor households giving 73% of the contributions, or collectively more than $643 million. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times wrote, Insider and several other news organizations have identified 74 members of Congress who have recently failed to properly report their financial trades, as mandated by the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act of 2012, also known as the Stock Act, which prohibits the use of non-public information for private profit. This followed the 2020 congressional insider trading scandal that happened at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic in the U.S., when several members of the U.S. Senate were caught making stock trades after being briefed about the coronavirus and the massive impact it would have upon the economy, jobs, and the stock market. Each of these scandals resulted in zero conviction by the Department of Justice. Some members suffered short-term political misfortune, but this was marginal at best. The reality is that members of Congress, including the country's third highest-ranking official in the U.S. government, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, are reportedly frequently engaged in such acts and are never brought to justice for any crimes they commit. There are a number of points to elaborate on this that are relevant to the upcoming midterm congressional elections. For one, the entire U.S. political system encourages corruption because politics is essentially reduced to money. Being able to outspend political opponents is an accurate predictor of electoral success, which is basically the most important factor in any election. The way that campaign finance laws are structured, especially the landmark 2010 Citizens United case that now equates money with free speech and legalized so-called dark money, means candidates and sitting politicians spend the vast majority of their time asking people, particularly wealthy people, for money. Naturally, this leads to pay-to-play schemes and political favors being accounted for. Some political scientists in the U.S. have thus argued for publicly financed campaigns to ameliorate this issue, which is already the norm. For example, in Germany and other Western European countries, the status quo means, in a nutshell, that elections can be bought and that politicians find themselves indebted to the people that finance their campaigns. Secondly, being a member of Congress isn't profitable compared to private sector carriers and is in fact costly. Members of Congress make over six figures, but this isn't a high salary when they have to self-finance their accommodation both in district and in Washington, D.C., plus their travel cost. This further increases members' dependence on campaign contributions and prices average people out of political office. As Congressman Dan Kresna hinted, rather crudely, this means only people who are already wealthy can even afford these costs, or that politicians have to engage in unsavory business practices like insider trade to stay afloat. Of course, the extent of some members' wealth gains while in office, such as Speaker Pelosi, blows this totally out of the water. Clearly, they are using these traits to enrich themselves outright. The way the so-called democratic system is currently conceived in the U.S. leaves much to be desired, to say the least. What is clear as day corruption in most comparable Western countries is the standard working order in Washington. The U.S. political system not only provides incentives for politicians to enrich themselves while in office, but pretty much requires them to do so in order to even live a decent life. This has obvious drawbacks with regard to the quality of American democracy. Studies have shown that the U.S. democratic system is a functional plutocracy, for example, a government run by the wealthy. Likewise, the fact that elections can be purchased is an open secret. The courts have codified it and it's widely discussed by the public as well as openly in the media. This creates such a degree of cynicism that makes people lose faith in the system altogether. This, reflected in the high amount of eligible adults that don't vote, usually floating around half the voting age population in most elections, which suggests that elections in the U.S. do not reflect public opinion, not to even mention the other baked-in issues such as the Electoral College. Common Dreams also reported Americans for Tax Fairness revealed recently that billionaires have poured hundreds of millions of dollars into campaigns this cycle largely to benefit Republican candidates. Frank Clement, executive director of Americans for Tax Fairness, declared a torrent of billionaire cash is drowning the U.S. democracy. Money talks when it comes to influencing candidates and winning elections, and the loudest voices by far are billionaires pushing for lower taxes so they can accumulate even greater wealth and have even more power and influence. Clement added, if we're going to have an economy that works for everyone, billionaires need to start paying their fair share. And if we're going to have a democracy that works for everyone, we need to greatly curb the influence of billionaire money in our politics. Based on an analysis of Federal Election Commission FEC data from Open Secrets, ATF found that through the end of September, 465 American billionaires have pumped over $881 million into federal midterm races, with the top 20 donor households giving 73% of the contributions, or collectively more than $643 million. Putting that into a national context, ATF tweeted that billionaires represent 2 millionth of a percent of the American population, but they are responsible for 7.4% of all political donations so far this cycle. The group's report highlights how unprecedented the findings are, explaining that $881 million was already a 44% increase in billionaire contributions over the entire 2018 midterm cycle, which totaled $611 based on an earlier ATF analysis. Reflecting the GOP's enthusiasm for tax cuts that benefit wealthy individuals and corporations, ATF found that by a 3-2 margin, more billionaire cash is supporting Republicans about 59% than Democrats about 39%, with most of the remaining 2% going to super political act committees, PACs, which can collect unlimited contributions from donors for backers of cryptocurrency and the Israeli regime. The takeaways align with Bloomberg reporting, which detailed recently. Citadel's Ken Griffin, Blackstone Incorporation Chief Executive Officer Steve Schwarzman, and Oracle Corporation founder Larry Ellison are among the billionaire Republican donors who have rapidly scaled up their political contributions this midterm election cycle, boosting the odds of a divided Washington for the next 2 years. The three men worth a collective $150 billion are among the 12 top political donors ahead of the elections, according to the most recent data from Open Secrets. Of that dozen, 10 are backing Republicans in a big way. They have spent a cumulative $338 million, up 250% from the 2018 cycle. If you look at the people who are given on the Republican side, Griffin and Schwarzman and the others, they're all historically Republican donors. David Tomasi, a founding partner at Chartwell, a strategy group, told Bloomberg, adding, "It's not like this is their first rodeo with giving. It's just got more weight behind it."
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.